Hi, it's Giffin Lebates here, and today as I physically walk through the Finnish forests, I thought it would also be fun to mentally walk through the Ethereum blockchain system and investigate a bit what is going on underneath, how the plumbing all works, and what it is about Ethereum that allows it to do all these smart contract-y, ERC-20 token-y, NFT-y type things. So, to start with, let's have a quick, if somewhat simplistic, summary of what the Ethereum blockchain actually is. It is a decentralized, distributed database spread out across, well, not spread out across, copies of which are stored on thousands of computers out there on the internet, and those thousands of computers are all communicating with each other through a peer-to-peer network. And their main aim is to make sure that every single one of them has an identical copy of the Ethereum database, as it were. And you can think of all of these different computers, which are called nodes, as an army of accountants and auditors whose aim in life is to ensure that everything in the database makes some kind of sense and that they all have identical copies. So there's no conflicting balances or conflicting records in the database. And of course, just as is the case with real world accountants, these nodes expect to be paid for it. But the funny thing is, they're not all individually paid for the work that they do. There's a bit of a lottery that goes on as to which one gets paid every 10 seconds for adding more data to the blockchain. So that is a lightning summary of what the Ethereum blockchain is all about. And you, as a user, are more concerned with transactions. So you'll have a cryptocurrency wallet, something like MetaMask, and you'll be using that in order to send transactions to the blockchain that will then hopefully be picked up and added to it and become part of the immutable history of all the transactions that have taken place in the past and will take place in the future on that blockchain. So that's a quick summary of what the Ethereum blockchain is all about. There's a lot more to it than I have put there, but that's it at its simplest form. So then the question is, well, what is in this database? And the main thing that is in the database is a record of everybody's balances. The Ethereum blockchain instantiates something called Ether. It's known as its native cryptocurrency. It's the unit of accounting that is used in order to pay all these nodes for the work that they do. And it's the store of value that gives the blockchain some kind of meaning and makes people want to interact with it, because people like moving value around. It's one of the things that human beings turn out to be very good at. And when you submit a transaction to the blockchain, there are different types of transactions that you can have. The simplest one is that you have a balance recorded on the Ethereum blockchain that says you have this much Ether. That's the native cryptocurrency of the blockchain, and you want to send some of it to somebody else. And you can think of a transaction as a kind of little program or script. It tells all those nodes, run this little line of code, and the result of that will be that my balance will be decreased and yours will be increased by the same amount. However, there are more sophisticated things that you can do on the Ethereum blockchain. Namely, it's not just storing balances, it's also storing little computer programs. And in the Ethereum lingo, these are called smart contracts. They're kind of tiny self-contained computer programs, and they explain exactly under what circumstances what kind of things will happen. And things that smart contracts can do is automatically move value around, or they can instantiate data structures, and those data structures can be used to represent things. Now, that sounds very vague, but when I start telling you that these things are a record of a new kind of token, or a record of, well, whatever data you really like, but the fact is you can start making or building your own tokens on top of the blockchain, and then if you get enough people enthusiastic about them, then they'll take off and they'll become popular, and people will start trading them the way that they are trading the underlying native cryptocurrency, the Ether. So where should we go next? Okay, yeah, gas. Once you start looking into Ethereum, you're going to discover that you have to pay for your transactions, whether it's a simple transaction to send some Ether to a friend, or whether it's to interact with a contract in order to buy an NFT or to swap one kind of token for another one on an exchange, these things all have to be paid for. And there are different sections of payments. And this is something where I think people get a bit confused, because the payments are across different channels. And we'll look at each of those in turn. So the main one is the transfer of value. You can send a transaction where you're saying, I want to transfer 0.04 Ether from my account to your account. And that's a transfer of value. And you can also transfer value into smart contracts. So rather than you sending your Ether to a person, you're sending it to one of these little programs that is stored on the blockchain. And that program then, based on its code, can decide what it's going to do with that value. It may hold on to it. There may be another function that the program has that allows the program deployer to withdraw those funds to its his or her own account. It's really up to the developer of the smart contract. And if the smart contract developer has made a mistake, well, then that value may be locked in that contract forever and is therefore effectively lost. So that's the kind of value transfer level. Now, underneath it, harking back to how I was talking about the fact that all these different nodes and all these different sort of virtual accountants, as it were, expect to get some kind of payment. Well, there you have the transaction fee, and that's a separate thing from the value transfer. You have to pay a transaction fee in order for your transaction to actually get adopted onto the blockchain. And there's quite a complicated formula that is used to calculate what that transaction fee should be. It used to be a bit simpler, but I think last summer it was, the way that Ethereum works changed, and now the transaction fee has a much more complicated structure. And the transaction fee is calculated in a rather strange way. The blockchain nodes look at the amount of instructions that they are going to have to run in order to complete your transaction. So they look at how much effort is involved in processing your transaction. And there's a neat table where they can look up the instructions that you're giving and how much each of them costs in something called gas. Now, gas is different from the Ether that I was talking about. Gas is kind of a unit of accounting for the cost associated with running an instruction on the Ethereum blockchain. And this makes it very similar to gas in motor cars. Your car needs gas in order to be able to drive somewhere. And gasoline has a price, and that price varies from day to day, depending on what's going on in the world. And it's exactly the same in Ethereum. The gas that you have to buy in order to run the instructions in your transactions has a price, and that price fluctuates. So you get something called a gas price. And if you look at your transaction and you calculate how much gas is going to be needed in order to run it, and you look at the current gas price on the Ethereum blockchain, well, when you multiply the two, you get the cost in Ether of running your transaction. So that's a quick explanation of what gas is all about. So now when you look at your transaction, you have value that you're transferring, and that value may even actually be zero. You may actually not be transferring Ether to somebody else. You may be calling a function in a smart contract that isn't concerned about paying at all. It's concerned about changing the settings of some data on the blockchain. The gas part will still have to be paid because the instructions still have to be run. And this is where it gets an extra bit more complicated, because the transaction fee is now split into two parts. There's a part that is simply burnt. This is an attempt to make Ether deflationary, because in the past, well, actually still now, every time a block is added, more Ether is magically created. And that means that the total supply of Ether keeps growing and growing and growing. And the problem with that is that, as we know from the real world with fiat, if you print more and more money, you have inflation and the purchasing power of that money declines over time. And naturally, the people who hold a lot of Ether would actually like to see it increase in value rather than decrease in value. So by taking the transaction fee and saying this chunk is just simply going to be burnt or destroyed, the Ethereum developers have modified the Ethereum system so that Ether is now deflationary. In fact, there is less and less Ether in existence over time, even though more of it's being printed. So you can think of this like a central bank printing more and more euro notes, but also taking old euro notes out of circulation and destroying them, and in fact destroying more old notes than they print new notes. That makes a currency deflationary. The second part of your transaction fee is what motivates the miners and the nodes to actually do their work, and that is kind of the tip to the miners who are verifying transactions and packaging them into blocks and adding them to the end of this decentralized distributed database. And they take that part, and it's actually quite a tiny part of the fee, of the transaction fee. I was surprised at how small it is. They get that as their reward for running their nodes and running their mining software. So when you look at it, nowadays the transfer of value in Ethereum from one place to another actually goes to three places. There's the value transfer that you may be conducting, transferring Ether to another person. There's the mining tip, which is part of the transaction fee that goes to the miner. And finally, there's the third component, which disappears off into the Ether. Actually, that's probably not the greatest word to use at that point. That's the part that is burnt and destroyed and disappears forever, thereby ensuring that Ether becomes a deflationary cryptocurrency rather than the inflationary one that it used to be. So it is all quite complicated. Each individual little bit kind of appeared over time and makes sense. When you look at the entirety, it can be a bit overwhelming to try and get your head around the whole thing. But hopefully this video has been a good starting point. Do feel free to ask for any clarification in the comments, because I track them and I'm quite happy to answer them. Plus, those kind of questions give me the incentive to go out and make more videos that are actually more relevant to people. And I believe at this point you're also meant to say hit the subscribe button and hit like, just so that I get more traction on my channel. That would be great from my perspective, but of course you don't have to if you don't want to. I hope you found this interesting, and I'll see you all in the next video soon. Bye for now.